This is the State of Things. We're recording this interview this morning in downtown Raleigh at the Museum of Natural Sciences. I'm Frank Stacio. Early voting is underway, and one of the most watched races in the state is the competition for governor. We continue our 2016 election coverage today with a look at the governor's race. Incumbent Governor Pat McCrory joins me today. Pat McCrory was born in Columbus, Ohio, but raised in North Carolina. He received his bachelor's degree from Catawba College and worked for almost three decades at Duke Energy. He was the mayor of Charlotte for 14 years, made an unsuccessful run for governor in 2008 before winning the office in 2012. His tenure has been marked by efforts to improve economic growth, which he calls the Carolina comeback, and controversies around conservative social issues like HB2 and abortion. Governor McCrory joins us today to talk about his platform and priorities. Governor Pat McCrory, welcome to the State of the
Union. Good to be back. In fact, today I've got a busy day. We're going to Lumberton today to deal with some very, very difficult flooding issues.
Well, let's talk about that. What's the update now? I know there's still
some difficult issues. We still have our first goal is to get people out of the shelters. Yeah. And in Lumberton and Princeville is where we have two major areas of shelters, and we need to get them out as quick as possible. They've been there for a long time. These are the people that could least afford a flood. They've lost everything, and we've got to do everything we can to help them. Second major goal is to get them into permanent housing. One of the dilemmas we're having is to get them into hotels. We had a lot of hotels that were flooded. For example, in Kinston, we have almost no hotel rooms because their hotel's flooded, and they need them for business, too. And then the other main issues are schools. Lumberton has two elementary schools that will never reopen due to the flooding. Princeville has one that won't be open probably 5 or 6 months because of the environmental issues. And from schools to housing to floods to shelter, we still have over 100 roads closed in North Carolina due to this prolonged flood. And the issues keep piling up. But I put together a task force where we're going to come up with long-term solutions for each of these areas. And thank God we have a rainy day fund that we had in our budget this year of several billion dollars. And I was harshly criticized for not spending that money in the past, including by my opponent for governor. But thank God we have a rainy day fund like the state's never had before, and we're going to have to use that rainy day fund. And also we're going to have to use some of our unemployment fund. We're thankfully that we had a $2.6 billion deficit when I came to office, but now we have a $2 billion reserves, and we're using some of that reserves right now to speed up unemployment for a lot of people who lost their jobs because a lot of small businesses are underwater right now.
Well, let's talk about economic development. You have talked about the fact that the North Carolina from the third quarter of 2013 to the from the first quarter of 2013 to the third quarter of 2015 was number one in the nation in economic growth. We do have data for the other two quarters now, the last quarter of 2015 and the first of 2016, and there we take a sharp decline. We notice that North Carolina ranks in those two quarters 29th. Those coincidentally follow were in part or all of the post-HB2 period. Are we taking
a turn in the other direction? We're the fourth. This last quarter, we're the fourth fastest growing economy in the United States of America. We've had 30,000 new jobs since that legislation. So we have a $25 billion economy. I think at best estimates, a couple hundred million dollars maybe were impacted by that. But we have a $25 billion economy in North Carolina. Our unemployment rate is now 4.7%. When I came into office, it was 9.4%. And not only that, but this year, right now, our revenue is coming in like we've never had it come in before. We have a surplus this quarter of over $100 million more coming into our budget this quarter than anticipated. And most people thought we'd have $1 billion in deficit. Virginia has $1.2 or $3 billion in deficit. So
obviously, the economic
doing
growth
very, very good.
Obviously, the economic growth and the unemployment rate was the result of the recession that everybody inherited. Economic growth pretty much mirrored the rest of the country.
That's not true either. Our economic growth is much faster than the rest of the country.
Well, we're right in the middle of the country. Interestingly enough, when it comes to economic growth, as I say, those quarters absent the last two, if you put the last two quarters together, we're 29th. When you put the two last quarters together, in economic growth. So that's a big drop off. But here's the other interesting thing, and this is the Bureau of Economic Analysis. You can look at it. But it's actually pretty easy to work.
It's pretty easy to find out. Last quarter, we were the fourth fastest growing economy in the United States of America, and that's really easy to look up too.
So the other thing is, if you look at economic growth, there's a nice steady line. It goes back, in fact, to 1998, and it's a pretty straight line. You'll see the bumps and bruises from recessions, but it goes all the way back, and it's a pretty straight line, diagonal line up. And your administration and previous administration share the same kind of growth rate over that period. The growth for income, however, North Carolina ranks 23rd in GDP when it comes to income. So you've got strong economic growth overall, but income's right in the middle of the pack. So where's the rest of that money going? Who's benefiting by that economic growth?
Well, most of our economic growth has occurred in the major metropolitan areas of Charlotte, the Triad, the Triangle, Wilmington, Asheville, where the pay is better. The biggest challenge we have is in the less populated areas of the state, as we see in the rest of the nation. However, even in the less populated areas of the state, since I've came into office, the unemployment's been reduced in all 100 counties. In fact, most counties have had a unemployment drop by over half. So we've had tremendous progress. And again, we were the fifth highest unemployment rate in the country. The fifth highest unemployment rate in the country just 4 years ago. We're no longer the fifth highest unemployment rate in the country. We're not even the top 30 in unemployment, and that's tremendous progress.
If you have these jobs and we're in the middle of the pack with in terms of income, and in fact, per capita annual income overall, not income growth puts us at 23. Overall income, we're number 40 in the country. So we've got jobs, but apparently, and we've got huge economic growth, as you point out, but we're 40th in the nation when it comes to income. Where are these jobs? Who's getting them? And are they enough to keep people afloat?
Well, all I can tell you is right now, when we reduced the business tax and we reduced the income tax and made us more competitive, because we were losing to South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Texas for jobs. And now we're winning a lot of those competitive battles from the last 3 years. And as a result, we're getting more revenue in the budget to pay for example, the largest pay increases for teachers that we've seen in the past 3 years in the nation. In fact, we gave every entry-level teacher a $5,000 pay raise, even in those areas that have not had the economic growth. And we had starting pay teachers for 5 years in a row before I came into office making $30,000 a year with no increase whatsoever. I've increased their pay by $5,000. In addition, since then, we've given every teacher well over 4% pay raise, and some teachers got 15 to 20% pay raises because we grew the economy in North Carolina. And we have more revenue now coming in from our business tax and for our income tax. After lowering those taxes, we have more revenue coming in, and I think that's a very positive sign for our state.
The increases obviously come after deep cuts because of the recession, so those increases come off of deep cuts from a state where teacher pay had not ranked very high nationally.
That's correct. In fact, when I came into office, our teacher pay was ranked 48th in the nation. I lowered to 41, and by January, we'll be down in the low 30s in teacher pay. That's a huge increase. Decrease. Now, before I came into office, at one time in the 2000s, we were 17th in the nation. When I came into office, we were 48th in the nation in teacher pay. We've dropped to 41. We're going to go down to probably 32, 33 based upon the legislative action that we took this year for teacher pay. And I'm very proud of that. Plus, the bonds that we passed, $2 billion in bonds, we're putting money in to our universities. University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill is going to get a new medical skill building. North Carolina A&T is going to get new engineering facilities, which were desperately needed. A&T's facilities were horrendous. Western Carolina is going to get new science labs. Our community college is going to get new labs for electronics, mechanics, and even truck driving school. And we're putting money into our state parks, which we've never done until I became governor for the last 30 years. So we're using the money for good causes in a bipartisan way, and I'm very pleased with that.
Let's stick with education for a minute, sure, because North Carolina is not spending as much on education in terms of per pupil spending. This is a fast-growing state. Its population is growing, so you might expect that the education budget would increase. But in terms of per pupil spending, before the recession, the teacher pay in the state, when you look at per pupil spending, the state still ranks among the lowest in the country. And why not get that up at a time
when
you've
got to build the economy to do that, unless you want me to raise taxes even more, and even my opponent doesn't want to raise taxes. But we're putting more money in teachers. We've tripled textbook funding and technology for teachers in the last three, tripled the funding for that. In addition, frankly, some of the numbers that were projected for students in education didn't come to fruition. They did not have as many students as projected, so some of those statistics need to be adjusted because some of the projections for kids going into school didn't actually happen. And also, we've got a lot of kids that are homeschooling, charter schools, and also going into private schools.
Let's talk about taxes for a minute. GDP growth from 2013 until now had a compound annual growth rate of 2.5%. That's with the tax cuts. If you look at the period from 2002 to 2006, where our taxes were rated, we were number 46, highest taxes, except for four other states, in the country. And in that period, we had a 3.9% compound rate. So that's faster and by 1.5 points, better growth than after the tax cut. How do you explain that?
It caught up to us later. Businesses finally found out years later, as 2007, 2008, 2009, they started going, we're moving to South Carolina, we're moving to Georgia, we're moving to Texas to avoid the highest income taxes and highest corporate taxes in the Southeast. So when you raise taxes, the immediate impact isn't felt, but the long-term impact was being felt in North Carolina. And we were losing a lot of businesses' competition because we had the highest business tax and highest income tax in the Southeast. And we've reduced the business tax from 6% to 3%, and we're getting more revenue than we had at 6%.
But those states, those companies were moving into the state with this high tax rate.
But at that small percentage, but later on, we started losing business. Believe me, as mayor of Charlotte, I started seeing businesses save. Manufacturing businesses started moving across the border 3 miles to save 2% net. And believe me, if you know anything about manufacturing, if you can save 2% net or 3% net, you will move. That's a lot of money in a low profit margins that they have in manufacturing. And now manufacturing is coming back strong in North Carolina. In fact, this week I'm going to be making some major manufacturing announcements throughout North Carolina. Aerospace is booming in North Carolina from Asheville to Wilmington. And that's one commitment I made, is that we're going to bring back manufacturing in North Carolina. And that is so important, especially the small towns in North Carolina.
A lot of businesses say they're staying out of North Carolina. You have a group of 68 signing on with the bill that calls HB2 discriminatory. These are publicly traded corporations with fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders. Hasn't HB2 hurt the state of North Carolina?
First of all, almost all those companies are not only doing business in North Carolina, they're growing in North Carolina. Many of those companies that signed that letter have since grown in North Carolina. I think we've had four companies that decided not to locate due to a social issue. I happen to disagree with a company making a decision, a business's decision on a social issue. I don't know where it ends, but...
Can they do that? They have fiduciary responsibility.
They have fiduciary responsibility to their stockholders.
That's right, and that's the number one concern. Can they really let politics, and are the CEOs of these companies liberal, and can they actually allow that to dictate their
I think it's a mistake for business community, the sports community. Where does it end on conservative or liberal politics if you start making business decision based upon social issues, whether it be conservative or liberal, abortion, gun control?
What if it is a business decision?
I think it is.
What if they say we can't recruit in a state that discriminates against African Americans or gender?
This state does not discriminate.
If they perceive that, well, if there's a perception,
if you give me an example of where that is happening, I'll deal with it, because we do not discriminate based on those.
The courts have said voter ID targets African Americans with surgical skill, with surgical targeting. That would be racial discrimination, according to this
court. That would be the Richmond District Court, which has yet to be appealed. We had the exact same laws as 33 other states regarding photo ID. If photo ID is good enough to get Sudafed in North Carolina, I think it's good enough to protect the ballot box of North Carolina.
Let's talk about HB2. And now that we see emails that suggest that you were opposed to this, that you were trying to get the language changed, that you worked with the legislature trying to change HB2, and you were opposed to this. It was signed. It was passed within hours of a special session. You signed it within hours of its being passed. Why didn't you wait? And if you were opposed, as your the email suggests, why didn't you come out and tell the people of North Carolina that you had serious reservations both about the city of Charlotte that may have gone too far and your legislature that went
too far? Actually, I did. If you read the emails in Charlotte, they read one of my emails to the city of Charlotte in which I said, why are you doing this? You're causing a mistake. You're trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist. They read that email to the city council and ignored it and went ahead and voted for it on that night. Regarding the state legislature, when I signed the bill, it was only a five-page bill, by the way. It didn't take me long to read. I stated when I signed the bill that I disagreed with three parts of the bill, and I've changed two parts of that bill since that point in time. And I signed an executive order outlawing any discrimination based upon sexual orientation on the hiring and firing of all state employees, just like the governor of Louisiana and New York have done. And I also signed a bill reinstating the ability to sue for discrimination in state courts. Those were two major aspects of that bill that I did get reversed. But I do not agree with the ability of a city to fine and threaten a 30-day jail sentence to a private sector employer, say a Gold's Gym, for not allowing a boy to go into a girl's locker room shower facility. I strongly disagree with that.
But isn't that exactly what civil rights legislation? I mean, isn't that Lester Maddox's argument about not allowing African Americans into his privately owned diner? Isn't that precisely what civil rights legislation is about?
I have a chief of staff who's an African American. He'd be offended by even comparing that to Lester Maddox, allowing a boy who thinks he's a girl into your daughter's locker room or shower is no comparison to the civil rights struggle of African Americans, and we will respectfully disagree.
But you understand that the jury is out in terms of what is understood in the world of biology. Your interpretation of boy and girl doesn't match what biologists say about the way gender is much more ambiguous than your black and white definition.
When you're in a shower room in a middle school, people know the difference, and that's where we respectfully disagree.
So then, and you have said that what you're doing by signing this bill was protecting the safety of North Carolinians.
And the privacy. The
safety and privacy of North Carolinians. I read the bill, too. Then I had to read it a second time because I thought I missed something. There was no enforcement mechanism. If we're protecting the safety of North Carolinians, why is there no enforcement mechanism written into that bill?
Because we'd used the enforcement mechanism that we've been using long before that bill was passed, and that's called trespassing. If someone enters a highway rest stop or a park restroom facility that doesn't belong there, we'd deal with trespassing like we always have. Sadly, the Charlotte ordinance threatened a 30-day jail sentence to a private sector entity that happened to disagree with government or the mayor of Charlotte or the head of the HRC that wanted to put a mandate, a 30-day jail sentence. To me, that's government overreach at its worst.
You still support Donald Trump? He has boasted about committing sexual assault. Do you still support Donald Trump?
I support Mr. Trump, and I also, the same thing I'd ask the question about Hillary Clinton, who just in today's paper, Mr. Clinton, former president of the United States, did some things, conflict of interest regarding trading favors through the State Department. We've got two candidates that definitely have some character flaws. Some trust flaws.
Donald Trump boasted about committing a crime that would be a crime in the state, sexual assault.
Bill Clinton did it.
He didn't boast about it. And Bill Clinton isn't running for president.
He's going to be in the White House. He's going to be right next door to the Oval Office.
You have a university system here that is not alone. Our state university system and private universities all over the country struggling with ways to combat sexual assault on their campuses. Yeah. Here's a man who boasts about it, and you support him.
I disagree. I've stated he ought to have his mouth cleaned out with soap, and you supported Bill Clinton when he ran for president. So there's contradictions everywhere. I assume you've supported Bill Clinton.
Pat McCrory is running for governor, re-election as the governor of the state of North Carolina. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed the debate.
To find more links to our election coverage, and by the way, we did talk with your opponent, Roy Cooper, and you can find a link to that conversation as well. Our website is stateofthings.org. Just ahead, Three Generations of Art, a collaboration between family members. Stay with us on The State of Things. Comets out of form, sagt schon auch einmal und danke noch einmal, Comets out of form.
jeder lacht, lernt mit Freude, lernt dem alle Face. Glücklich ist der Jid, wo's kennt